My name is Kevin Onweze. I am one of the founders of the Marcus Garvey Liberation Garden. And right now, we are in Southeast Houston, the Yellowstone area, close to South Union, South Park, all of that good stuff, Southeast Houston. This is my home. We've cultivated both the front and backyard. Right here in the backyard, we have a patch of collard greens, and to my right is a patch of kale that we just moved from our last location. We've recently had a change of venue due to some misunderstandings and different points of view. And we've always been very alternative in some of our growing methods. A lot of the things that I do, I try best to replicate the natural environment. When people are used to seeing community gardens, they don't see that. You know, they're more used to seeing the very cut, manicured, and pretty gardens. With a small budget, pretty gardens cost money, and they're not always as functional. So, but I'm currently working on, you know, trying to be as functional and as pretty. It's funny, people. Yeah, people will love something pretty, no matter how much it works. But if it works and it ain't pretty, they don't want it, you know. So so I'm trying to find the proper balance between the two. And so I think I'm getting a little bit better at it. And we are a couple of rows over there. We do a lot of companion planting. So we have some strawberries that we dropped in that we moved from our last location as well. Companion planting is putting two plants together that help each other. So basically every plant, for instance, is kale. They need a certain amount of space. So I plant maybe a foot and a half away from each other because they need to spread their roots. But we still have a foot and a half between every plant. So when you do companion planting, you can put something else in there that doesn't need the same nutrients that the kale needs. And so they kind of work together rather than fighting each other. And we're able to do space maximization. So I just have a few strawberry plants now, but prayerfully as they continue to grow, we can multiply them. And then I can also plant some other things in here that grow well with kale, such as peas, onions. Our big thing that we had at our last location was red clover. That was our companion planting there. We had a kale and red clover area. Here, the red clover we would have to do things a little bit differently. So, and my plan is where we're standing, we'll be putting red clover around the edges and things of that nature instead of directly in here. So that is what I try my best to do, is replicate the natural environment. It makes gardening a lot easier. I've also, in this misfortunate circumstances, I've kind of come to the realization that home gardens are a little bit more functional. And the model of it is a little bit better, I believe, than a community garden. Because when you do community gardens, it's always you always have to pull people to come to the community garden. But what we've been doing with our program with Grub Not Grass and spreading the Marcus Garvey Liberation Garden, by putting gardens at people's homes, they become more attached to it. The watering and the weeding becomes a part of their daily or weekly schedules, rather than trying to make an appointment to go across town to help us grow food. They're much more attached to it. So everything happens for a reason. And over the last couple of weeks, I believe, man, I think we've done close to 10 gardens. So we've definitely been doing some alternative things. One of the things that I'm really excited about is our rooftop garden that we're building at the compound on Tour de Hood, right in Third Ward off of Dowling and Wheeler. So that's pretty good. And also, we believe that starting these gardens is a form of economic development. Here in my neighborhood, I'm not sure if you saw the locals, you know. So it's crime ridden. And a lot of people that walk the streets, they would like a better choice. And they can't be hired other places. Some of them may have little training. One of the most infamous quotes that's floating around now is from a brother, Ron Friendly, and he says, growing food is like printing your own money, you know, because just like I have kale leaves right here, I can take these kale leaves and turn them into dollars quickly, way quicker than I can going to work for someone, you know. Yes, I have to work with the earth and be patient and know different types of things. I do believe that this can change the economics of our neighborhood, decrease crime. It can also improve the health of our communities. All of these crime-ridden communities are also food deserts. So, and I know I have another friend of mine who tells me there is not one problem that a garden can't solve. So, you want to talk about crime? People do crime because, well, not everyone. Some of them just like it, but more than likely, it's for a way of living. People are trying, you know, they're human beings just like we are, and they have no other alternative to feed their family, so they resort to crime. But what if I told you you could literally feed your family from your backyard? Even some of these people who do walk the streets from time to time, we do hire them, we do try to have them involved in some of the things that we do. And at the very least, as they walk up and down the street, we get numerous compliments on what we have here. And we can go to the front yard. I got some more stuff. In the front, we have corn, purple hull peas, squash, a Kushaw squash. I just pulled my first, the biggest squash I've ever grown. And it grown in my front yard. It's almost 25 pounds. People see this. People and kids walk up and down, and they saw me when it started, when I started it, and it was just dirt. And now they see the corn, and now it's taller than me. I have squash climbing the fence, you know. I don't like just cutting my grass, you know. Just having grass is very inefficient. With the amount of yards and yard space that we have here in Texas, if every home had a garden, grocery stores would not exist. Or there would be no need for them, rather than some of the necessities that we can't grow here or that you can't do at home, such as wheat. Abundance of corn, abundance of certain items that you need much more acreage to do, but those greens, those lettuces, the onions, herbs, they all can come from our front yard, and we don't have to pay a penny for them other than the water bill that we already incur, you know. So it's a very simple but very profound activity that I love. I became a farmer because I'm an accountant by trade, and I realized the importance of natural resources while I was working for an oil company. And I realized that natural resources are free. The only thing that kind of costs is the equipment or the labor. And gardening is a way I can cultivate natural resources with a very small budget and be able to distribute them and also be able to help the environment. You know, so I truly, truly love it. And the simple fact of being able to give somebody some food that will sustain them and improve their life and prolong their life, you know, for that fact that alone, I'll be willing to give some food away for free. And we have, for people who have fell on hard times. I've received calls and they just need some food in the cupboards, but they have no money. And they've been very supportive of our program, and I never think twice of giving, because these nutrients in the soil, they don't belong to me. I'm just a catalyst in the process. They'll be there with me or without me. You know, I just help them change into another form, like all matter does. So it's the same. It'll be here. These kale leaves will be here if the plants weren't here. They'll just be in the soil, you know. And the water will be here with or without me, you know. So it's a beautiful thing to be a part of the process. And we started the Marcus Garvey Liberation Garden after Hurricane Ike. That's when the idea formed, around 2008. In this community, all the stores were closed. There was no food. So myself, Tafari that you met, another gentleman, we decided that we needed to know how to grow our own food. Because if something of that nature happened again, then we would be, you know, pretty much on our way to dying or starving to death. And, you know, if we waited till then to start a garden, you know, the average crop takes about 3 months to come. So that means we'll be starving for 3 months at the least. But that's only if we knew what we were doing at that point. So we felt like that we needed to start learning how to feed ourselves. And that's where the Marcus Garvey Liberation Garden came into play, to be able to give us some sort of food security. When we first started our first year, we didn't sell a thing. We told everybody we wouldn't sell food. The food would be free. All you had to do was come and work. Nobody came to get the food. People would come and work and didn't take anything. It was interesting. When we told people that food was free, we had too much food left over. I would take food to different shelters, to Shape Community Center, and I would have to force food upon people. And a good majority came home with me. And it's, I couldn't believe it. But as soon as we started telling people this food is for sale, then we never have enough food. We never had enough kale. We never have enough squash, okra, you name it. We couldn't keep enough of it. So I guess, I don't know, people, I guess it's like they don't value it if it's free. They think it's a lower quality. Oh, he's giving it away, so it must be trash or something. Nah, it was the same quality of food that we sell. But people are more inclined to taking it. I don't know. It perplexes me. But I ate it regardless the way it came. And the best. And now we do this. People call us out. We do what we call edible landscaping. You know, if you just want your lawn cut, you can call someone else. You know, I convert your lawn into food, or at least a part of it. And that's what we do. And that's our program called Grub Not Grass. And to what we do here, as you can see, what I would say, more than 2/3 of my front yard, that's a garden now. And I'm not finished converting the entire backyard. So it's an interesting dynamic. And at the very least, just making sure that people see it, I hope that more and more people are influenced to do the same. If they don't know how to do it, we'll definitely help them. When I first started gardening, like I said, it kind of came to me via my profession of accounting. And then I spent time gardening and farming and growing food. The more time I spent, the more reasons I found out that we should continue and do more. So first it was self-sustainability, then it grew to economic development. And now, with even more and more gardens that we're installing, then we're eliminating food deserts. And so it's a wonderful thing. And I hope that in soon time, that we'll be able to document and see how crime has decreased in the areas that we've affected. It affects so many things, environmentally, psychologically, just the fact to know that I don't have to spend $200 at the grocery store. You know, that goes a long way in this day and time, especially for families. You know, I don't have children of my own, but we've helped many people who have families. So now we've installed gardens to where the children take to it more than the parents will. They'll be out there watering and interested in what plant or what flower this is. So many other things, which is something else that we do too. We now coordinate a greenhouse at Jack Yates, and we use that greenhouse to fuel the garden. So now when we go out, you have a garden in 2 hours, depending on the size. We till, and all you got to do is water and weed. By the time we leave, you'll have small transplants and things of that nature. So these okra plants that I have, a couple of sunflowers and some of the herbs, came straight from Jack Yates and grown by some of the children there. And then we come and install gardens. It's a wonderful thing. And now we're trying to work more directly with youth and teaching them. It's a lot. There's so much that can be done just by dealing with the earth. Houston is a rural urban town. I've had people bring their horses to mow this lawn next to me. And I have somebody who delivers me horse manure from their ranch. They drop it off right at my gate. Sometimes you can see people just riding their horses down the street. I went to a school where I remember some of my friends. I've seen people ride horses to school. You know, it's a very, very interesting dynamic that we have here. If I'm not mistaken, the grocery store model only started in the late 50s and 40s. You know, so how did people have food before then, you know? And so because everybody grew something, you know? And it's another saying is, if you tickle the ground with the hoe, it laughs at you with a great harvest. This food that's here, there is no way that I can eat it all myself. Even the people who do live here with me, we can't eat all this food that we're growing here now. We share with our neighbors, and really I've been talking to my neighbor. We'll have a garden over there in a few. So it's just... It's an industry of relationships that I've been finding that the more you grow food, the more relationships that you make. And I was thinking about it the other day. The qualities of a well manicured lawn is one of the most unnatural things ever. Yeah. A well manicured lawn is one grass growing abundantly, and you don't want absolutely nothing else growing with it. You want it as thick as possible. You put chemicals down to water it. You have a ridiculous water bill, watering stuff that does absolutely nothing to sustain your life. Really, it costs to have a well manicured lawn. You're talking about paying to have it cut every week, or paying to get the equipment yourself, maintaining your equipment, your time and your energy on it. Why not grow food? When you grow a garden, we till this garden once. We tend to it, we water, we plant. I guarantee you, I pick from this garden more often than people cut their lawns. You know what I mean? Why not do a garden? I see some peas over there now that I can pick and we can be snacking on. You know, it's really a change of thinking. It's like, quit wasting our resources. If you look anywhere in nature, right across the street at this vacant lot, you have things growing prominently, but you don't see just one thing there. You know, that's not how nature works. You can go to any forest, any jungle. There is not a jungle of just banana trees. That's a farm plantation, but it's not the most natural thing, you know. And so to have these grass lawns and to give our resources that we work for just for it to be pretty, that's what we work for, to have pretty things rather than working to feed our neighborhoods, you know. And I really, really hope more and more people do it. And if they need help, then I'll be more than willing to help. We're a part of a coalition called the Food Everywhere Coalition, which is pretty much our staff, the staff of people from the Last Organic Outpost, which is in Fifth Ward. It's a couple of gardens from Acres Homes. It's just anybody who is passionate about growing food, we're working to grow. And we believe that we should see food growing absolutely everywhere. If you have a place of business, you should be growing something for your employees. If you have a home, you should be growing something for your home. If you have a restaurant, you should be growing something for your restaurant, you know. And people don't understand how powerful it is, you know. Like, it's also philosophical. We can learn a lot from plants. When the seed germinates, the germination process, it's almost death. The seed dies, and what's inside of it comes to life. And before it reaches up, and before it becomes visible, before it shoots out stems and leaves, it shoots out roots. And the roots go down and start nourishing, and then it starts shooting up its stems and its leaves, and it grows as strongly as it can. It'll grow through a crack of concrete if you let it. You know, it doesn't complain. Regardless of how fertile the soil is, how much water the soil is, the plant will do its absolute best to thrive in that environment. And if it does, it adapts to become even better in that environment. Even like this sunflower that I have growing here. This sunflower plant, last year, it grew straight up. And almost as a fishing rod, and it had one head. But I harvested the seed, and now we're planting it. And if you can look towards the middle of the plant, you can see that it has all of these other stems and that's shooting out. So now, instead of a stem, this is about to become a bush with multiple heads rather than just one head. So the plants adapt, and they become more prominent to the environment that they're in. They grow, they reach their peak of beauty, which is flowering, and then they provide for the next generation. They don't try to prolong their life. They don't try to live much longer than what they're supposed to. They do what they can, and then they provide for the next generation. As human beings, if we could just model that, we would do without a lot of problems that we have today, you know. And so I learned from the plants, you know. I learned, and they're patient. They don't rush. So many different things. They work together. it's very close to my heart, and I think I'll be growing food as long as the Lord allows.